Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey Rangers, it's me, Jackie Cation, and it is another year of the Dork Forest. What the heck, right? So you should know that the website, JackieCation.com or thedorkforest.com or dorkforest.com, if you don't enjoy a determiner, are all still available. You could hear the show on all of the different things. I've been trying to figure out how to get off Spotify. Try not to listen to Spotify because they throw in ads that are not approved by me, Jackie Cation. So, we'll see what I could do. Anyway, but so you could always watch the show on my YouTube channel. I think it's The Dork Forest or Jackie Cation. It's all linkable on JackieCation.com, the Dork Forest page. And I have another podcast called The Jackie and Laurie Show. Not quite as sleepable because it's just me and Laurie Kilmartin bitching about stand-up comedy and also celebrating it. Anyway, so here's the thing. You can donate again to the show. If you enjoy the show, I would love for you to donate about $100 a year because that keeps everything in rolling along. And you can do PayPal, which is my email, jackie@jackiecation.com, which you can also email me anything you like about the shows and stuff like that. You can Venmo me at Jackie Cation. That's my Venmo handle. And if you see me in real life at a comedy show, you could just hand me a sweaty wad of 20s or whatever you like. That'd be great. And I also do stand-up comedy. So you can see my tour dates on JackieCation.com. You can see, you can listen to very old episodes of The Dork Forest on my Bandcamp. And I also put my very first album that I ripped. It's on my Bandcamp page. It's called It's not Circus People. It's Cake Is Not My Downfall, which is a track on the Bread album, but it has other jokes that are not on the Bread album. The audio is what it is, but there's also some very early Dork Forests and a storytelling album called Storytime, all on Bandcamp, and everything's either free or a couple of bucks. So new album coming out in February called Altercation and new special. And that, I'm sure there's more to it, but let's get into the show. Rangers, guess what? I'm in Vermont and the woman who is featuring for me, who has been on the program before about celebrity crushes, is back. And, Amma Marfo. Amma Marfo is at ammamarfo.com/comedy for the website. It'll be in the notes. And at Amma Marfo on Instagram and YouTube. And she has a special coming out in fall called Fidget Spinster. Get it? Anyway, if you like a fidget spinner, and she does that, but that's not going to be her dorkdom. But one day she will meet Aldrin Cornejo and they will go, what are you working on? Anyway, what are you spinning? Welcome to the program again.
Thank you for having me back. I do love yapping at you, which I feel like last time was I had a crush on this person. And you were like, I don't know who that is. Oh, and at least two of them, I was like, yes, you do. And then we talked through it and we got there. So,
and that's it, right? I mean, it is a great misfortune that I don't have that photographic memory that the best politicians have where they remember everyone. I lose cousins. So,
sure.
I don't see them often enough. But here's a scoop. We're talking hockey because you like hockey, but then there's also that TV show that's about hockey and kissing.
Yes.
So I watched the first episode of that show last night.
You did. Okay.
I did. Heated Rivalry. And guess what? It's great.
Isn't it?
I didn't know if it was, I've seen too many terrible like where the gay people are killed at the end, or yes, it's somehow shamed. But this is shamed in a way that's so romance novel shamed, mm-hmm, where you're just like, no, nobody cares about that. It's like, because in romance novels, she's always like, I'm too smart, I'm not supposed to tell anyone. And you're like, nope, he's going to like that. And, yep. And this one has that vibe that he, and I've only watched episode one. So, mm-hmm, good for them. Yeah. For, and it's funny and it's sweet.
It's very sweet. We came to this yesterday. We were talking a little bit about TV shows we were watching. So Jackie, myself, and Madeline, our wonderful opener, who's local here. And you had mentioned, you said there were a couple shows that you watched, and you said, and I haven't watched Heated Rivalry. And Madeline and right, I just kind of opened our mouths to unload in unison. Because that is a thing that happens when you talk to women. I haven't done the full math, but I'm going to say comfortably women between the ages of 28 and 59 with HBO Max subscriptions, is they will just open their mouths to monologue about why you should watch it. So we decided, let's make this a conversation, but you're, yes, already 1/6 of the way in. So wonderful. I'm excited.
And that's great. And, but let's start with hockey itself, mm-hmm, because that is a program that you enjoy. That is it a sporting is event. It is, I don't, I think the only one I've done is Hockey Masks of Goalies. And,
which is fascinating. It's a fascinating conversation.
Because they get tradition to decorate, right, they get to decorate their own hockey mask, mm-hmm, because they're the ones that are willing to be the goalies. Mm-hmm. Is that why?
I would imagine. It's just like, you're going to get hit toward a bunch. Do you want to do a craft before? And they're like, I would like, right, to do a craft before. Or talk, right, to a person who does a craft to like express myself.
Now, did you grow up liking hockey? Have you always kind of liked hockey, or?
I have. So both of my parents are from West Africa. They're from Ghana, and they moved to Canada in the 80s.
Oh, that might.
Yeah. So my sister and I were born in Canada. This is something that, okay, most people do not know about me, but find out during an Olympic year when I don't root for the U.S. And they're like, well, why is that? Anyway, so we followed hockey our whole lives, but grew up in Tampa, Florida, which has a hockey team. They founded that hockey team the year we moved there. They were not good for a long time. And then, okay, around the time I went to high school, they started to get good. So they ended up winning the Stanley Cup for the first time the year I left to go to college. So we followed, okay, them from like terrible to amazing. They're now regularly in contention. Go Bolts. So this is something I come by very honestly. Okay. I've loved it the whole time. Very big into Olympic hockey. Now that we have professional women's hockey, also very into that.
And I have to say that growing up, there was a hockey team in Milwaukee that I liked, mm-hmm, that I never watched, but I liked, they were called the Admirals.
Okay.
Milwaukee and, Admirals? Yeah. Okay. And now they don't exist anymore, but I accidentally saw a hockey match one time. And I've seen several things by accident. Let me just say that I've been dragged to things. I saw Martina Navratilova and Chrissy Everett play exhibition tennis. I saw Miles Davis.
My dad saw Miles Davis and like brought it up in my 20s. Just like, you know, I saw Miles Davis once. And I was like, if it were me, I would tell people that once a week. Like, how is that possible?
My stepmother accidentally saw Malcolm X speak. What? I was like, how come that didn't come up? Well, because she went to a dance in the 60s, okay, in the early 60s. Uh-huh. It was a church dance, and they were tricking young people into listening to Malcolm X. They were like, I want, nice, you to be political, but you're going to want to party because you're 18. And it was an unsegregated, it was a mixed dance, so, mm-hmm, she didn't tell her parents.
Okay.
And so she went, and then Malcolm X spoke. And then they danced.
I love everything about that story.
Right. It's amazing, right? And so Nancy Kashian for the win. I still like trumpet, but I still don't enjoy an extended solo.
More than fair.
But I love a good trumpet solo if it's not extended and it doesn't seem like it's never going to fucking end. But I'm going to have somebody on to explain jazz to me. But right now, hockey is being explained to me.
Yes.
And so Tampa Bolts?
Tampa Bay Lightning.
Oh, Lightning.
Tampa Bay Lightning, called
the Bolts.
Yes, we go, let's go. It's easier in chants.
Yes.
But yes, Tampa is the Lightning capital of the world. More strikes there than anywhere else on this earth. So
they also have two cigar factory museums.
They do. Not far from where the Lightning play, in fact.
Oh, there you go. So how many people are on a hockey team?
So on the ice at any given point, there are five players. So three centers, or right wing, left wing, and a center. Two defensemen, and then a goalie. So you should have five plus the goalie at any given point. If there are more than that, you get a too many men on the ice penalty. Somebody has to sit out for 2 minutes. You could also have situations where there are fewer. So if a penalty is assessed against the other team, that team's part of their penalty loses a person for 2 minutes, 5 minutes, or 10 minutes, depending upon the nature of the infraction.
Right. 10 minutes. Are you actually, did you knock a tooth out? What happened? So what makes it 10 minutes?
10-minute misconduct is usually like a major fight, or if a fighting incident like draws blood, usually that's the distinction between 2, 5, and 10. Like, is someone bleeding? Do we have to check for teeth? that sort of thing will happen.
So has it become less violent? Because it's traditionally known as a very violent sport, but I feel like it's gotten less violent in the last 20 odd years or whatever.
So it has, because I think we're aware of CTE risks. Hockey doesn't have as many CTE incidences as something like football or boxing, but it does have some because it is a sport that you are smashing people into boards.
A lot of contact.
Yeah. Yeah. Things like that. So there's a little bit less fighting incentivized, but it is kind of seen as an honorable kind of thing. Like if someone takes a shot at someone else on your team, it's not mindless pugilism. It is, I'm standing up for my friend. Don't do that to my friend. So there's an element of honor to it.
So like if somebody crashes somebody into the board, so their teammates might be like, too hard, not okay.
Sometimes.
And then is that one of the reasons why they might get into a pushing match, which is what it seems to be? Okay.
And there are teams who have a person who ostensibly is good at hockey, and most of them are, but their job is more or less to be the person that fights when that happens. This person is called an enforcer. Yes.
Enforcer,
okay. Yes. The Tampa Bay Lightning has a wonderful enforcer right now named Eric Chernak. He just played for the Slovakian Olympic team.
Okay.
But yeah, he is the one most likely to fight. They also have Emil Lilleberg, who I don't think scored a goal last season, but he hit a bunch of people. So that was fun. And they keep up with those stats. Actually, I think he's out right now because he got some manner of facial fracture. And they're just like, hey, you can't play until your face heals. And he's like, there. So, yeah.
Are there any other roles on a hockey team that don't entirely covered by hockey? There's the punching person.
And they have captains. They have assistant captains.
Okay.
And then I really like it because it's also a sport that has a lot of volunteer work built in. So I know our team works a lot with children's hospital, youth. Oh. So there's a lot of youth hockey programs. A friend of mine who still lives in Tampa has two kids. Well, she has four kids. There are a lot of kids in that house, but two of them play junior hockey, coached by former Lightning players, and sometimes current Lightning players will go as well. Years ago, she and I did a women's hockey camp where you would go and like learn skills on the ice. You would meet people in the main office, and a couple of the players came down and like hung out with us and did drills. So that was really fun and exciting. Like, I can't overstate to you how exciting it is that everybody else is into hockey now, because I get to talk about all of this. Before, I just had to sit on it and wait for someone to ask.
So, the fact that, I don't know where you want to go with this conversation, but I kind of want to go lateral into the Olympics.
Let's talk about it.
Because there was, I didn't know that there was a women's Olympic hockey team. Has there always been? I mean,
always, but for the last several years, I'd probably say the last 20 to 25 years.
Okay, so for the last at least four Olympics.
At least four Olympics, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we seem to be good.
We are. We're quite good. And it historically was sourced from college hockey because there wasn't a professional women's league. Now, within the past 3 years, we do have now a professional women's hockey league. There are six teams so far.
Okay.
So they're now able to pull from professional hockey in a way that they couldn't previously. Now, by comparison, the men's team has gone back and forth between allowing NHL players to play and not. So sometimes it is like all college players or players that play overseas, but the players that are on NHL teams can't, and they didn't take a break. They came back for this Olympics. So this was an Olympics with NHL players. So they too could pull from professional leagues.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And is it arbitrary? Does it feel arbitrary? Like what year they're doing it?
To me, it feels arbitrary. Like sometimes they're just like, we'd rather not. And then sometimes they're like, actually this time it's okay. I suspect we're going to see more where it's okay. And they're able to plan around it. But yeah, some Olympics, they just haven't wanted to.
Okay. Well, I didn't see either of those or the Paralympic hockey, but I understand that's done on sleds or, I think it's, I saw like wheelchair soccer at the Paralympics the summer, and that was amazing. Just the upper body strength is of course extraordinary, but have you watched any of the Paralympics hockey?
I have. I have watched sled hockey. And in fact, the US and Canada are playing the men's, because there is not women's para hockey. They're petitioning for it. We're hoping for next Olympics. But for this Olympics right now, it is just men. Although it is technically a co-ed coded sport. So there are teams with women on them. Like the Japanese sled hockey team does have a woman.
Oh, okay.
But at this time, most of the teams do not. They're allowed, but many don't. And yes, it is. So they're on sleds. Mm-hmm. And you have two sticks. And you're essentially kind of like doing a combination of propelling yourself with the sticks on the ice, but also shooting and advancing the puck towards the goal. It's fascinating to watch. It's super athletic. There's so much like actual hockey in it. Like I think you would, I think a lot of people kind of assume that Paralympics is like a pared down version of it. No, there are penalties. There are fights. Like it's the same thing. They're just seated.
It's
wildly compelling.
Right. It is wildly compelling. It's just, it's the same sport, but slightly different. But so is every sport when different people play it.
And that is why you should go as hard for the Paralympics as you do for the Olympics. You can
I wish they were concurrent. I really do. Because I bet you the Olympians who are not Paralympians would go and watch the Paralympians.
Yeah.
And vice versa. And they would cheer each other on, and it would be, you know, talk about, you know, I'm tearing up thinking of it. Come on.
Yeah.
Sell it.
Let everybody watch everybody. I will say one thing I suspect is happening is that I know in some instances you have to modify the field of play. So as an example,
there might not be enough room. Yeah.
Yeah. The hockey was in the same arena for the Olympics as it was for the Paralympics, but they have to adapt it a little bit. So the way that you go into the bench and the penalty area, for example, there are clear doors because you're lower to the ground. So you have to be able to see in and out in a way that you wouldn't, because you can't get on a bench if you are in a sled, and they don't want to have to do that. And then there are other pieces of it that they kind of have to adapt. So what I suspect they're thinking is we can't run them at the same time because we wouldn't be able to switch them back and forth.
Right.
So I think they have like the break to adapt the venues in a way that Paralympians could use them.
Right. And the snowboard was the same. They had to level out a different playing field. Mm-hmm. I'd love for them to figure it out. Anyway, do they play to a certain number or do they play by time? Like it's not ping pong. They don't play to 20, right?
Right. They play by time. Okay. So it is for typical, not typical. So we'll say for Olympic hockey, NHL hockey, PWHL hockey, it is 3 20-minute periods. For sled hockey, it is 3 15-minute periods.
Okay. Yeah. So
it's three periods. Like three periods. And then if it is tied at the end, then you can go into overtime and then potentially a shootout as well.
Okay. So is overtime done like in 2 minute or 2 5- and 10-minute increments or whatever, and then it's just one person, like sort of like soccer where one person tries to get a goal, another person tries to get a goal?
So it's usually 20 minute overtime periods, and then it's sudden death. So like when you score, it's done. What they've done, and they've changed the rules about this a little bit, and Olympic rules are a little bit different from NHL or PWHL rules, is then when you get to a shootout, there are 5 rounds initially of each team trying to score into the other. And then 3 of 5 wins. If it ends up being tied, then you can keep going until somebody does win.
Yeah. Wow.
Unplanned pregnancy? Learn how people are getting abortion pills by mail for a safe abortion at home, no matter what state they live in, at plancypills.org. That's plancypills.org.
Okay, so who's your favorite team? Is it the Tampa?
It is the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Okay, and how many games a year do they play? Is it a lot like baseball or not a lot like football?
It's in between. So the NHL season is 81 games. 81 what? Games.
That's a lot of games.
That is a lot of games.
I believe there are like 18 football games.
Yep. Yep.
So, I've done
fantasy for both, and one of them took significantly more of my time than the other.
80 games where they're on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And the games are at least, they're 60 minutes.
At least. And then there are intermissions for like clearing the ice and stuff like that. And then it's like a stoppage of play game. So it's 20, but the clock stops and starts. So you're there for a bit. But yeah, 81 games between October and roughly April, May. And then playoffs. So if you go further, you go further.
And is the Super Bowl called the Stanley Cup?
It is. Yes.
And that's the name of the trophy that you get.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's done in brackets, and then all of a sudden, you're playing for the Stanley Cup. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, and what is the best game you ever saw? I don't know. Who are your favorite teams and players and moves, and what do you got?
So I will say I have considerable recency bias because last month I went to the stadium series. So most games in the NHL and the PWHL are played indoors. The NHL does a handful of games that they play outdoors, the Winter Classic being one, and then they have what's called the stadium series. So there are 2 to 3 additional games that are outdoors. They're in places that typically don't host hockey. So I went to Tampa in the beginning of February to see the Bruins play the Lightning at Raymond James, where we normally play football.
Okay.
So it's an outdoor game. And it was very exciting because
Tampa?
We scored. Yeah,
ice?
I know. So it was very cold that weekend, which I did not expect.
Okay.
Like
so
I was
40s.
Watching. Well, I was watching just a regular game the Thursday before I had to leave. And our local newsman, ABC Action News' Dennis Phillips, was on the concourse with the hosts. And he was like, we're predicting snow this weekend. And I did not think I would ever have to say that. So it was quite cold. Like by the time we got to the game, it was 41 when it started and like 36, 35 when it ended.
Wow.
Which
as
someone who wanted to pack shorts was not happy about it. And I let everyone know who I ran into.
I wanted to pack shorts to go watch an outdoor hockey game. Mm-hmm. Anyway, how was that game?
So it was very exciting because Lightning scored first, but then the Bruins scored 5 unanswered goals. So there was a period where it was 5-1, but we came back. We ended up winning 6-5 in a shootout. So it was a lot of hockey, which if you don't like being cold outside, as I do, was both exciting and deeply uncomfortable. But we got through it. And then the other thing about that, which I talk a little bit about in a set that I have now about hockey, is that we saw a goalie fight. This does not happen very often. So Jeremy Swayman and Andre Vasilevsky fought.
Okay. And which are the ones on the Bruins and ones on the...
Jeremy Swayman is the goalie for the Boston Bruins. Andre Vasilevsky is the goalie for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And they came to center ice and they fought partway through the second period.
Literally, they had to run at each other from across a hockey field, skating rink, whatever. Mm-hmm. It was their shit talking as they skated towards each.
I suspect
don't go
they're
anywhere.
Probably exactly like it. Very much is like a hey, and then the other person has to be like, okay, and then they get to the center and they fight. And in that same way, for any reason that you would fight, it's the kind of thing that like changes the energy of the game, fires people up. And again, they never do this. So I think about how many of the Lightning players said like in interviews, they're like, yeah, once we saw that, like we got fired up and we're like, we can't let him have fought for nothing. And that momentum brought them from so far behind again to winning in a shootout. Exactly.
Do we have any idea what the fight was about?
It might not have been about anything. Some fights are about nothing. Sometimes it's just, I think we need a change of momentum. And the two players that fight are just like, we're going to be the ones to do it.
Wait, does it feel like, now I don't mean to belittle the sport of hockey. Does it feel like wrestling?
Sometimes.
Like it might be drama?
I know exactly where you're going, and sometimes it does. Yes.
Okay. Where you're just like, this, we need to change the narrative of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do that by doing something weird.
Yeah.
Like two goalies fighting.
Yeah.
Because what on earth? They can't even see each other.
Yeah. And like, they can't talk to each other. It's very far. And even if they were to yell at each other, there's so much going on, they wouldn't hear it. Most hockey fights are not that, but some are. Some very much are just like, we need a momentum shift. We're going to do this.
Okay. Now, and are there other hockey movies and shows that I have not seen? I've seen The Cutting Edge, which is
a little bit of a hockey movie.
Right. There's a hockey guy who becomes a figure skater. And when the hockey games at the Olympics happened this year, I wanted, and especially the women's hockey, I was like, what if there was a movie where there was a hockey player who had to become a figure skater, but it was a woman, or some of the women figure skaters had to become hockey players because they were out of teammates. So like,
Jackie, do you want to write this movie?
Yes. No, I want someone else to write this movie and for me to get paid with a story idea. But, because Alyssa Liu, from Oakland, California, let's say someone is like, we just need one more player. And she's like, I'm a figure skater, not a hockey player. And then all of a sudden they're like, here's some pads. You could do this. And then how great would it be if she were, I don't know, sliding around and doing like figure skating stuff on the hockey field.
And then maybe she falls in love
with another lady.
I'm imagining like a really compelling mini series where somehow she's doing both. It's like that two dates to the dance where she's on the skating team and the hockey team at the same time and has to like make it to both. And then somehow her final for both is scheduled the same day. And then she has to like make a decision and there's a big reveal and whoever she's dating like finds out and is like, I'm still in love with you anyway.
Right, like it's somehow negative, which is a classic romantic movie trope where you're like, no, again, nobody cares about that. That wouldn't be a thing. Did you make both events? Did you win both of them? Probably. So if there's, as opposed to The Cutting Edge, are there other hockey movies? Wait, so this Ducks.
Mighty Ducks. So there are three Mighty Ducks, two of which I think are worth your time. third one's okay, but like the first two are really where it's at. So the Mighty Ducks, absolutely. And in fact, the second one has a kid that's on that US junior team that was a figure skater and they kind of like convert him into being a hockey player. He does great.
Okay.
Miracle, if you're into like a historic one.
Oh, right, right. The one about the Russian. I was at a high school event called the Persian Market. Very sensitive.
Oh,
anyway,
sure.
It did not, I do not believe it made it into the 90s. But in 1980, we were there. My stepmother, Nancy Cation, who's come up twice now, she was, for her exercise, she was in a belly dance troupe in 1980.
Okay.
And she danced at the Persian Market, her troupe. Her and these two other women. Mm-hmm. And I was in the audience and I was standing by these two guys. They're like, who's the little blonde? And I said, that is my mother. And they stopped talking. Anyway. So in 1980, I've digressed again. It's a classic Dork
we'll
Force
make it
moment.
Back. We'll make it back.
Guess what? I'm talking with Amma Marfo. Feel free to go to ammamarfo.com/comedy. Instagram, it's Amma Marfo. YouTube, it's Amma Marfo. And you're going to be at the Traverse City Comedy Festival in April, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Fidget Spinster coming out this fall. So follow the Instagram and then you'll find out about it as it happens. let's get back to the fact that so we got a miracle is the one where the U.S. team beat the Russian team, and it had never happened before.
Mm-hmm.
So I do remember it was a big deal.
Yes.
So, yeah. So that's the other movie. That's it. The Ducks and Miracle.
There are others, but those are the ones I think I enjoy the most. And then in terms of TV, this is actually a very elegant segue into where we're going next, because we're talking about Heated Rivalry, but it does have two predecessors that are important to the telling of this story of Heated Rivalry success. So Heated Rivalry is a show. It's a Canadian show. Originally commissioned by a Canadian network called Crave. Now, Jacob Tierney, who is the creator, writer, and primary director for Heated Rivalry, did two shows previously with Crave and another collaborator that have hockey involved in them. So the first...
Really?
Yes.
So he likes hockey.
He does.
He's Canadian.
Or at least he likes telling stories about it. So the first...
Yeah.
is Letterkenny, which many folks may be familiar with. It's streaming on Hulu. It is a Crave show, but it's basically about cliques of folks that are in Letterkenny, Ontario. And one of those cliques is the hockey player. So there are two hockey players that are kind of part of that ensemble cast, Riley and Jonesy. And
is that, and are all of these fiction? Okay, good.
Yeah, these are fiction.
Letterkenny. Okay.
So Riley and Jonesy are kind of part of this ensemble. So you get a sense of like, how they play hockey, how they treat it, how it's essential to their personalities relative to everybody else on the show. And then within that part of the story, there is a referee and player on their, it's like junior league team essentially, named Shorzy. You never see Shorzy's face. You just hear him talk. Sometimes he's on the ice as a hockey player. Sometimes he is refereeing. And he's just this boisterous character that's like chirping, which is like talking smack to the other teams. And then around season 5 or 6 of Letterkenny, he gets a spinoff. So there is a second show called Shorzy, spinoff of Letterkenny, also available on Hulu.
Okay.
Narratively, they're so different from each other. Letterkenny's very fast writing. Like, I think about it as, in a lot of ways, really similar to 30 Rock, like high joke volume, a lot of just like quippy back and forth. Shorzy is a little bit more narrative driven, so you will follow a story over the course of the season. It's about this team that he pulls together to kind of turn around the fortunes of a losing minor league hockey team in Sudbury, Ontario. And while Jacob he's not credited as a creator of it, he directed a lot of it and had a really big role in that show.
Okay.
So both of those things he did en route to making Heated Rivalry. So when you watch Heated Rivalry, knowing that he also did those, tonally they're incredibly different. But when you think about the experiences he has about staging hockey as a sport and like finding ways to bring humor into an otherwise really beautiful story, you can see it's like, this is Jacob Tierney at his highest level of performance, just bringing along everything he learned along the way. So both Letterkenny and Shorzy, if you have not watched them, but Hulu is, like it did to me, saying you would like these, you probably would. Give them a chance. I think you'll really like it.
Okay. And then, but Heated Rivalry is based on a book, right?
Yes.
Or a series of books or something?
It's a series of books. So there is a Canadian writer named Rachel Reed, and she is a big hockey fan. Like, she just loves hockey, is an enthusiast in Nova Scotia, and felt some kind of way about the nature of the NHL and like the types of things that they are dealing with but not talking about. So things like the fact that there are no real active openly gay players, the fact that they kind of tend to sweep under the rug incidences of sexual assault or domestic violence and things like that. So she's writing so she's writing a story and a series of stories. There are 6 books right now. We're getting a 7th next year, that basically just goes into what is it like to exist in this world, in this professional league, being gay, not being able to talk about it, and Heated Rivalry.
Or any of the other kind of big, are the other books kind of about the other big issues that are not dealt with in the
some
hockey
of the other
world?
Some of the other ones will come
up. Isn't she amazing?
Fantastic.
And so, okay, so Heated Rivalry is the first one.
Yeah, so Heated Rivalry is, it's the show. It is the second book in the series.
And then
episode 3, which you have not yet gotten to, is based on the first book called Game Changer. So it takes a little bit of a departure. This is not a bottle episode. There's a whole separate conversation to be discussed about a bottle episode versus a departure episode. It's a departure, but it does come back around to influence the main characters later in the season. So you might be like, why did we get pulled away? It'll come back around. Stick with it.
Of course.
So those first two books are covered in
this first
one.
Season.
Yes.
Okay. Which is sort of like what they're doing with Bridgerton, and sort of like what they're doing with Reacher.
Yeah.
Where they're taking the books and they're like, we're just going to pull something from this one and some, and they do it with Marvel all the time, but there are 10,000 comic books. So you're not going to run out of story. But with a book where there's only six books, and I mean, he didn't know, nobody knew that they were, it was going to be this big, right? Or did they know?
No, they did not know. So Crave commissioned this series, and it wasn't even a given that the U.S. was going to get it. But then folks who really enjoyed the books kind of saw on TikTok, saw on social media, hey, Canada's getting this show that is based on these books that we love so much. Where is it for us? So HBO then ended up getting a distribution deal, and that's going to be important in a moment, a distribution deal to bring the show to HBO Max. They were not involved in making it. They just gave it a means for an American audience to watch it. Genuinely within 2 months of when we ended up seeing it. So a lot of people were caught on the back foot because it wasn't expected that the American audience was going to get to see it at all. It was going to be just a Canadian show. So no one was ready. And it caused a lot of problems in a lot of different ways.
Why? Why would it? I mean, you would think that that would just be a windfall. Everyone would just be like, thank you. Yes, let me give you my money. Is because if it's that popular, if it's that huge, everybody's got to be like, now I want to. Yeah. Why was there any sort of controversy or trouble with HBO?
Jackie, would you believe it was because they underestimated women?
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Yes. Why would you ever make television for women? You're making it for 18 to 34 year old men.
Exactly.
It turns out. Yeah. To quote Lewis Lee, the owner of the Comedy Club in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Do you know why I book all different kinds of comics, Jackie? Everybody has a job and I want all of their money. And, and so everybody wants to see whatever they want to see. And I want to provide that for them so that they could buy drinks at my comedy club.
And I believe that is the way to think about it. But I think they thought it would be this thing that they released fairly quietly, and what seemed like a small pocket of folks on the internet would get the thing that they wanted. And instead, it exploded. And everybody that watched it really loved it, which they should. It is beautifully made television. And they started
The story is adorable.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, the thing is okay, so I can see why. Do you remember that movie that it was the first ever gay romantic comedy movie with two men? Guy Branum had a bit part in it. I can't remember. It was called Bros or something.
Yeah.
And it was almost this, because you know, like the whole, I am not the straightest lady in the world, but pretty straight. And I like romance novels. So you would think that I would not be, this is not my porn, right? This is not the thing that I would want to watch. But it turns out it's so well done. And they have built this thing where, you know, love is love, this thing where if you ever try to watch Will and Grace again, it's painful. But it was a stepping stone to having people acknowledge that gay people were people.
Exactly.
You know, it's just like they do that with the Black community. They do that with the Latino, you know, and women and gays and everybody that isn't a straight white guy. We have to slowly introduce to straight white guys, I guess. And the rest of us who have to learn it, because we all grew up not thinking, like, I didn't know. Anyway, so that, whatever. So, but to find out that, so when I saw Heated Rivalry last night, the first episode, I was like, well, I'll give it a shot. It's because I like historical romances too. Yeah. And I usually like cishet, you know, that's what it is. That's my jam. So, but we started, they're charming. It's got that same tension between any two people that are attracted to each other. The chemistry is really good between these two young men, but they're funny about it. And they're just like, we play hockey. We can't tell anyone. Mm-hmm. And one of the young men is such a dick that he's just like, yeah, no, we can't tell anybody. Anyway, I'm going to kiss your face off. And then they kiss each other's faces off, and then there's penis action, and you see butts, you don't see dicks. I don't know if you see dicks later in the season.
You want me to tell you?
Sure, I don't care. Full frontal, is there full frontal boy stuff?
There isn't. But okay. There's a lot of implied bits and mouths, a lot of
So much. Even in the first episode, mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, it's there's blowjobs done well and blowjobs not done well. Mm-hmm. And it's a learning curve. I don't know if you know this about oral sex, Rangers. Anyway, yeah.
Be patient with yourselves. It takes some practice.
Yeah, practice makes perfect. And you know what's fun? Practice.
Ding, ding.
Anyway, so they underestimated the women. And they who did. Would like it?
They did. I think that they thought it was going to be a fairly small group of folks that watched it. And again, I think straight women are getting a great deal out of it, which, fun fact, if you take out the dynamic, like the power differential of heterosexual relationships and just let people fall in love, still interesting. It's great.
Still interesting.
So a lot of straight women are getting involved with it. A lot of gay men are really connecting with it because the books weren't initially marketed to them, so they weren't necessarily reading them. And then there is actually Catherine Van Arendonk wrote a wonderful article. I think you can get through Vulture, but it's technically a New York Magazine piece about the genre of straight men reacting to heated rivalry on TikTok and Instagram.
It's a genre.
It is. Like, they're having an experience as well. Like, they're going in, not unlike you did, Jackie, being like, there's no way I'm going to get anything out of this. And then the further into the season they go, they're really emotionally invested. They're kind of asking questions of themselves. And I think, frankly, they thought like, oh, if this is for women, then men won't watch it. And more men are watching it, some with their partners, some with their friends. And it's starting a lot of conversations. I've had multiple conversations with bartenders, and it just happens to come up. Like, I'm wearing a Heated Rivalry shirt, a friend's wearing a Heated Rivalry shirt. And like their female coworker would be like, I've been trying to tell them to watch the show. And I was like, bring them over here.
Yeah.
And I've...
What's the pitch?
So there was one young man I remember. He was like, I don't really read. I don't really watch TV, but he's very into video games. So I was like, what video games do you like? And we talked about Fallout. And I was like, what do you like about Fallout? And he was like, the like expansive storytelling and like the relationships with the characters. And I was like, all right, so you will get some of that in here. And I think it's also just like a really interesting conversation about masculinity. I was a film minor in college. And it happened the way that the schedule laid out that half of my classes were about masculinity in film. I've watched all the propaganda. You cannot explain The Godfather to me. I've written two papers on it. So to see masculinity now.
Better you than me.
Yeah. You know, they're just like, let me tell you why. And I was like, you can't tell me shit. I got an A in both of those classes.
I have four older brothers, and they will not stop talking to me about The Godfather and The King of Comedy. And yeah. Both of you guys could take a flying leap. They weren't made for me, and I don't like a movie where at the end, I finally watched the first Godfather, mm-hmm. and at the end of it, I was like, oh, I don't need to see any more of this. He's lying to her. This relationship isn't going to work out. At the very end of it, he said, no, it's I'm not going to be that guy. And then he's that guy. And then 2 seconds later, and I'm like, oh, I don't need to see this. I get it.
I did have to watch them, but I got academic credit for it. So it's fine.
Right. And they're well done.
Beautifully made movies. But all of this is to say, I've seen the propaganda about what men think they're supposed to be because of the movies that have been made.
Yeah.
So to now see what Jacob Tierney's been able to create, and not just with Heated Rivalry, I think Letterkenny and Shorzy both also interrogate masculinity in some really interesting ways. And like their idea on the show of what good men are is like a beautiful step forward.
Right.
So I think that's also been really valuable in this conversation. Like, men can be different. And I think you should consider it. So that's been really nice to see. So that's also been a really big part of its explosive growth. But so one piece that we talked a little bit about yesterday is I'm also a bookseller part-time. I work at a bookstore.
Right.
And the publishers were not prepared for the outsized demand of these books once the show got so popular, because they didn't think that they were going to have to sell to the American market. So that all of a sudden people are like, there are books, I want to read them. And they didn't have any. So for about a month, I was fielding phone calls left, right, and center. We didn't have any, and we didn't have access to any. So then when folks kind of got them, it was this huge opportunity for folks to be like, they're finally here, or we have two copies. Literally, whoever comes in and gets them, come get them. You cannot place hold. You cannot order online. Just come get it. The ship has since righted itself, but it's so rare. And sometimes this happens.
The same thing happened with Bridgerton.
Yes, the same thing happened with Bridgerton. I remember there were toys for one of the Star Wars where this happened. I can't remember which one it was, but essentially there was like a female toy, and then folks were like, we want it. And then whoever was the merchandising was like, well, we didn't think they'd want the girl one. So then they had to figure all that out.
It was Rey.
So there weren't any Rey toys, because they were like, people are going to want a toy of the girl?
I can't. My fury, the fact that there is no Scarlett Johansson Black Widow merch, except for knockoff stuff, is maddening. My jacket that I'm wearing is the jean jacket I'm wearing in my special and last night is an America Chavez jacket. Yeah. And it's a character that nobody knows what the hell I'm wearing. And when I wear my Captain Marvel jacket, they're like, good Wonder Woman jacket. I was like, I enjoy Wonder Woman, but I don't think you understand. That's not what this is. This is a Captain Marvel jacket. And I also have, anyway, so yes. So the underestimating of women who want merch, or people who want to read a book that was targeted towards, like, cause I heard about it's an entire genre, this hockey porn, hockey romance thing.
And being a bookseller, a lot of it gets recommended to me. So I read a lot of it, and typically
you're a good sport. I don't read everything that's been recommended to me.
I try to be, I'm like, let me see if I like it. And in the odd case, folks are just like, normally the grievance is there's not enough smut in this book. I have gone back to so many folks who recommended a hockey book to me, and I'm like, there's not enough hockey in this book. And it is not for a lack of desire on my part. I assure you, the sex drive is normal to excessive, but there just isn't enough in a lot of those books. And I think that this is a really nice balance, and you could tell it's written by someone who knows hockey. Another one I would recommend in that vein, if you are interested, is Shoot Your Shot. And is written by a woman named Lexi LaFleur Brown. Lexi LaFleur Brown is active on kind of like book talk, but her husband is a former NHL player. He played for the Tampa Bay Lightning. His name is JT Brown. He was part of the first all-black line of players. Three players on a line. So a right wing, center, and a left wing, all black. First team to do it was the Tampa Bay Lightning, and he was one of those three. So,
because there aren't that many black hockey players, it's been a Whitey Magoo thing for the most of the time,
for quite some time. It's starting to shift, but so her husband is a player. He has played for a number of teams. He's now a commentator for the Seattle Kraken, and her book is also quite good. But most of them, it's just like smut, and they do hockey, but you don't really hear a whole lot about it. And I'm like,
I would like someone to know about hockey if they're going to do it.
I would. Rachel does, and Lexi does.
It's the historical romance novels I read. I can't read the American ones because I know too much about American history.
Yeah.
So it's mostly British ones, because I'm like, do whatever you want. Create 1,000 dukes, because there aren't 1,000 dukes, but I don't care anymore. And that's awesome. Okay. All right, so the first two books of Heated Rivalry.
Yes.
The first book's called Heated Rivalry. And the name of the author who wrote is Reed, you said?
Rachel Reed, yeah. So the first season of Heated Rivalry is based on Heated Rivalry, which is the second book in the series. And then the secondary couple in the show, you haven't met them yet, Scott and Kip, their story is in Game Changers, which is the first one.
Okay. Oh, that's the first one.
Yeah. So the second season is based on the second Shane and Ilya book in that series called The Long Game. It's book 6.
Okay.
And
wow.
And then next.
So they're jumping around.
Yeah. And then next year, we're going to be getting a third Shane and Ilya book, which we weren't previously, but capitalism doing what it does. We're getting more Shane and Ilya. That book is...
We're hope.
Yeah. Yeah. At the moment, it's called Unrivaled. We were originally going to get it this September. And then Rachel Reed came out a couple weeks ago and said, I need more time for a couple different reasons. One, she did not expect to get swept up into kind of the media firestorm and popularity of this show. Right. She was highly involved in it getting made, which I think is really lovely.
Great.
And they brought her along for a lot of like the press opportunities and things like that. And they're like, it would not happen without her, which I love. But A, she's very busy, but also B, she deals with chronic illness. She has Parkinson's. And a lot of that is hindering her ability to write, both in terms of time, but also just physically. It's wearing on her a great deal. So they
want her to crank something out. Exactly. And she has Parkinson's, mm-hmm. and she hadn't planned it. So give her the time.
It's a hard time from a time perspective, but also just she's like, I need to be able to physically do it, and I can't right now. So right.
And there's six books. Why don't you just reread them? Enjoy that. Exactly. You knock yourself out.
Or reheat The Rivalry, which is the online parlance for watching the show. It holds up. Right? I've reheated it like 4 or 5 times.
All right. There you go. Or read something else. It'll be fine.
The next book now is coming out in October of 2027. So you've got a lot of time.
Will it be out kind of the same time as Fidget Spinster? It might be the same time as Fidget Spinster.
Well,
I'm a Marfo.
If I get it out in time, yes. So that is a push for me.
Everybody should go to your Amma Marfo's Instagram, and then you'll know things. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm just getting that out there.
I love that. It's always nice.
Because we only have like 10 minutes left to talk to me about hockey.
So what else you got? What else would you like to know? Is there anything you're curious about?
Are there any gay hockey players now?
Openly?
Yeah.
In the NHL, no.
Okay.
The ones we know of are retired. Or had left the league. There are minor league players. There are like a couple minor league players who, again, after they retired, hockey is an interesting ecosystem because even after you retire, you still stand the possibility of being very tied up in hockey. So you can coach. You can do commentary.
Oh, right.
You can coach in the feeder leagues like the AHL or ECHL and a number of those other things. So
there's still reason to hide it.
Exactly. Exactly. So we're hoping that some of this, and some of the actors on the show have been really open about, like, if you liked this show and you like the world where you're allowed to see this, the NHL should make an environment where it is okay for folks to be able to come out. And it's been very interesting to me because Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, unpopular for any number of reasons, and he's earned it. But he got asked if he had watched Cheetah Rivalry. And he was like, oh yeah, I've watched it. We really love it. And the league has not done a whole lot to integrate into it, which is probably good because they are straight up the villain in the long game. So the fact that he's very effusive about it lets me know that no one in his office has read the books.
Or he's lied.
Or
he has
lied.
Not watched the TV show.
Yeah.
He's just like, of course I've watched it. Well, hey, buddy, what did you think about this?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because there's, I mean, and you alluded to it when we were talking about it last night about the Russian kid.
Yeah.
And his family issues.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that his family keeps calling, asking for money.
Mm-hmm.
And his brother seems to be a real piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not looking forward. And so that's fascinating to me. Because the fact that there is that it's a whole story.
Yeah, so I'm very curious to see how the league will adapt to something like this because there was a controversy with the league a couple years ago. So they have an initiative called You Can Play, where theoretically the league is open to folks who are queer. They want them as fans. They, again, in theory, want them as players. And they had also introduced pride tape for sticks. So players tape their sticks. It's a means of like protecting your hands and also kind of like giving friction to allow the puck to go where it needs to go. And pride tape is what it sounds like. It is rainbow tape. And they had it in the league for a while. Several players had used it. They used it really prominently on pride nights. And then they banned it. And There wasn't really a super clear reason why that was, but a lot of fans kind of got in an uproar. A lot of players got in an uproar, and they ended up bringing it back. To me, it really just felt like, we didn't think anyone was going to notice. We're so sorry.
Right. Yeah.
And then even as all of this is happening, USA Hockey, which is the governing body for things like the Olympics, banned trans players. While the uproar about heated rivalry is happening, but again, it was very under the radar. They didn't expect folks to go. So there's this real interesting incongruity between the opportunity to bring in so many of these fans that are now like, I want to watch more hockey, and the NHL and USA Hockey being like, we're going to make it look like we don't want you here.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And how many trans hockey players are there? Three?
There aren't many, but one of them is actually, and Harrison Brown, he wrote a book called Let Us Play with his sister, who's a journalist, about the nature of trans individuals in sports. Okay. Harrison was a minor league hockey player who has gotten a couple awards in the minor league hockey league and then ended up playing a bit role in Heat of Rivalry later in the season. So he's on the show.
Good for him.
And it's so the world of the show is inclusive of that. And one would hope that like the wider leagues would be as well.
Well, did he make the team? Like, is he, he's clearly a good enough hockey player.
Harrison?
That he made the, to make the men's junior league or the men's junior varsity team. I mean,
so he won it pre-transition. So he played pre-transition and won two cups, had kind of announced that he was trans and then delayed medical transition to play for another season, and they won again. So has not gotten to do that post-transition. That's just kind of the nature of the league.
So she wants to essentially try out for the women's team.
I don't know to what degree Harrison is still playing. I'm not sure. Okay. I think he's since like largely retired and now doing more like advocacy work and acting. It's just one of those things where it's like, hey, I could have done this.
They would have.
But at every turn, the leagues are like, nope, you can't.
Don't do this. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. There was in the Olympics episode from about a year or so ago when the Summer Olympics came out, I did an Olympics episode of the Dork Forest. Mm-hmm. And I learned about the role of women throughout the Olympics because this woman had written a book, name gone, dorkdom, still there. Very much the Dragon Riders of Pern. I can remember the name of your dragon. Anyway, but she was explaining that a lot of sports in the Olympics start out as co-ed,
mm-hmm.
and then the woman wins,
mm-hmm.
and then they split them into men's and women's.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, are you kidding me? And she's like, oh no, they're going to take their ball and go play alone. They're going to be mad that a girl beat them. And then they're going to go, we're just going to have boys play now. And then you go make a team with girls.
Well, and there are a couple ways that happens, because they will either do that or then police what constitutes female. So there's a fantastic book called The Other Olympians that talks a little bit about the history of trans athletes, specifically in track and field, but it applies to many other sports. And they talk a little bit about that is the nature of kind of gender policing in sports, which we still see, but goes all the way back to the genesis of the modern Olympics. And they were doing it the whole time. Germany was involved a bunch, as you might expect. The U.S. was involved a lot, as you might not expect, but should if you've read a book. So it's all
and are living in today.
Exactly. Because it's I can't believe they're doing that. I was like, it's baked into the process. Like, we love the Olympics for the pageantry, but wow, there's a lot of shitty people involved in making it happen.
It's like FIFA, you know? We're just trying to, some people just want to watch and play soccer, football, right? And then everybody else is like, yeah, but how can you wear Emirates on your jersey, you know, and we turn this into a cash cow, and then it turns into something else entirely. So I don't really understand the world of professional sports, except for at the level of fandom, right?
Sure.
Because I know that there is a great deal of business behind it. There was some fake Lakers TV show. There was a TV show that was supposedly about the Lakers, but it was called something else. And it was a woman becomes the
running point.
GM. Running point.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
And I watch like 3 or 4 episodes, but sometimes I'm on the road and things just, I lose them.
I did finish it. Whatever. I liked it.
Oh, good.
I did not expect
to say. It was
only
one season or?
So far. It'll come back in a couple of months. I did not expect to say Chet Hanks was good in the show, but I think they figured out the thing that he's good at and built it around him, and he did great.
Oh, good. The Hanks family is very nice. So.
Well, we don't have to get into it. I have a lot to say, but
you have five minutes.
I will not take it on that. They, but yeah, Chet strikes me as different from some of the other Hankses. And then they're like, he's acting. And I was like, well, why is he doing that? But then I was like, oh, they built this so he could succeed. Actually, well done, everybody involved. Because I think if he had to do much more than what he did, probably not going to happen.
Billy Carter? Little Billy Carter issue? That's Jimmy Carter's brother.
A little. Like, think about the difference between Colin and Chet. They're very different.
And I only know Colin. I don't know Colin, but I only know that name because he hosted something and introduced me and was psyched about the name of this podcast, The Dork Forest. He was like, that's kind of the greatest name of a podcast ever. I was like, yeah, it is. Thanks.
Thanks, Colin Hanks.
Maybe I should put that on the website. So I don't know that he would remember that. So it would feel weird if he came to me and said, when did I say that? I was like, well, there was a weird theater event and you had to introduce me and it was something you said in passing that I've engraved in my brain because you're Tom Hanks's son. Anyway, I have taken, I say go over. What would you like? So Heated Rivalry, a yes.
Yeah.
Books and TV show.
Yes, but not the audiobooks.
Not the audiobooks.
I've been told the narrators are not great.
And
I had a
that's real.
I had several people be like, I did not enjoy the audiobook experience. So I'm going to ask you to use your words where you can.
Yeah, you can. And the thing is the books, they look like they're about 220, 280 pages.
And they move quickly. They do. So.
Right. And I watched that first episode. And if they don't move quickly, I would be very surprised. Mm-hmm. So and then if somebody wanted to start watching hockey.
Yeah.
Would you recommend college or Olympics or professional?
You can go back and watch the Olympic replays if you have access to a Peacock account. I think being able to start with like national sports is nice. If you're Team USA, you'll have to reckon with a couple things. Oh, we didn't talk about that. You want to talk about that?
Sure. Why were they like that? Can you tell? Besides the fact that they're 19-year-old douche nozzles, I mean.
So I looked into it a little bit because I was very curious about this. So for those unfamiliar, so the gold medal game for the Olympics this year, Milano Cortina, was between the U.S. and Canada. Being from Canada, I rooted for Team Canada. In both cases, yes. So the men and the women.
Yeah, men and women.
So the women played, I believe, the Saturday and won. And it was this massive deal. And it was really like,
and everybody was pleased and happy and there was joy in the land.
Yeah. And it was a really just nice affirmation of like investing in women's sports gets you beautiful results, both in terms of just like high athletic achievement, advancement of the sport and folks being interested in it. So the women won theirs first. And then the men played the following day. I believe it was the following Sunday.
Day.
It was within 2 days. It was the last day of the Olympics. So the U.S. men ended up winning, which was difficult for me personally, so much so that I was like, I have to take a sad hockey nap. Not the first one I've taken in my life, but this one like hurt real bad.
Because you know those players better or the men's teams better?
I know the men's teams better. I've had longer to like get to know them, and some of them have played in multiple Olympics. Very invested in both. It was just... I think the nature of it too was like, cause it was like a shootout goal and it was like very much a chance thing. So just like the nature of how the game ended felt a little bit differently. So Team USA is celebrating and they did this beautiful thing where there's a young man named Johnny Gaudreau who was playing for Columbus and was tragically killed along with his brother in a car accident a couple of years ago. And a lot of the young men on the US team came up playing with him. He would have been on that Olympic team had he not gotten in that accident and passed prematurely. So they brought his jersey out as part of the celebration, when they took the team photo, his jersey was in it. And then they brought his kids into the photo. And it was this very beautiful moment where it was just like men being cool and like standing up for their friend and making sure that a friend that should have been there was included. Wonderful moment. And then within an hour, 2 hours of that happening,
they broke it.
We got locker room footage of FBI Director Kash Patel partying with them, bringing President Donald Trump in on a FaceTime where Donald Trump essentially says, and now he's like, I would love to have you all at the White House. And I guess I have to invite the women, too. And the men in the video all just laugh. And that magic is broken because there had been so much over the last several weeks of the team supporting each other, the women going to see the men going to see the women. And there was this idea that they were treating each other as equals. So then see in that private moment when it was just them, no one fight back against that. It was immensely disappointing. So they then had to deal with the fallout of that. I talked to a lot of folks that were like, why didn't anybody issue a statement or apologize? To which I would say, you don't actually want them to say they're sorry. You want them to be sorry. And most of them are not sorry. So I'm glad that ones who didn't believe it
at least
apologize.
They didn't do theater. Yeah, there was no stupid theater.
I've seen many of them in commercials. They're not actors and you don't want them to try. So there was then a very, what could have been like a contentious moment, ended up working out really nicely on Saturday Night Live involving Connor Story, who plays Ilya Rosanoff on SNL. So we knew from like some press reports that Quinn Hughes and his brother Jack, two of the brothers on the US team who are kind of considered like the high level game clinchers, were going to be on SNL. And there were a lot of these calls for like, what is Connor Story going to do with that? He is advocating for a more inclusive NHL. And now this has kind of happened on his episode. He should refuse. He should drop out, to which I would say not his responsibility. He has a moment
not
of
his job.
Meteoric popularity, wanted to do SNL, got the opportunity to do so. It's not.
He is an actor.
Exactly. It's not for him to deal with. So what ended up happening on that show is in the opening monologue, the men come out. He kind of like asks some questions. They do some back and forth about like, oh, we haven't watched the show. And then ask some questions about hockey that can also kind of be interpreted as innuendo about sex. And he's like, well, yeah, we do that. And it's like, the notable one was like, oh, I got my teeth knocked out. And it's like, did you? And he's like, metaphorically, which is hilarious. So then they're just like, oh, well, he's like, oh, well, I would have loved it if you watched the show. And then two of the women come out, Hillary Knight and Megyn Keller. And they're like, oh, we watched it. So then you get to have a conversation with the women. And the difference in crowd response to when Quinn and Jack Hughes come out, tepid. I mean, you're excited because it's like Olympic medalist, but then the women come out and it blows the roof off. Like, that's exactly what needed to happen. And he got to engage with all four of them. The women got the spotlight that they earned, and they said something to the effect of, oh, well, we knew that we were coming, so we figured we'd bring the boys along too, which again, massive response, as should have happened. Oh. So it ended up kind of showing them kind of like, here's what you did. Like, this is the reception that you created for yourself. Apparently in the rehearsal, there was like a more audible negative response. And they're like, Quinn Hughes looked really disturbed by that. Quinn Hughes just looks like that. He always looks like he's been haunted. Like, just has this middle stare, like some, like a ghost is speaking to him. And the jokes in Milano were just like, it's Italian ghosts. He can't understand them. No wonder he looks confused. So everyone's like, why does he look like that? I'm like, guys, it's just his face. Anyway, we kind of got that moment of like, yeah, no, this is the reception that you created for yourselves. And it was really nice to watch.
And it'd be cool if they learned from that. But they are young white men, so maybe
probably not. Although, and
because, you know, they left to go eat McDonald's over at Trump. So, yeah.
Although not everybody went, including Jake Gensel from the Tampa Bay Lightning. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So some of the men's hockey players did not go.
Yeah. So five, I think, did not go to the White House, and then an additional several did not go to the State of the Union, but did go to the visit. It's documented. You can look it up if you'd like.
Right. You can look it up if you need to know who didn't and who did and whatever.
Yeah. But all this is to say, if you are interested in hockey and kind of want to get involved in it, go back and watch the replays of the Olympic matches, not just the ones that the U.S. is in, any of the ones that you'd like, because there's wonderful hockey being played in Slovakia and Czechia, and a number of other countries have very strong teams.
Okay.
And then the advice that I have actually taken, they make a lot of kids' books that explain sports. My niece, who is almost two and thinks she can read but cannot actually, has one on hockey. She has one on basketball. And like, it explains it in a very granular way that if you don't know anything about it, it's ostensibly explaining it to a child, but it's going to help you too. So do not be afraid of that.
I read a series of books when I was in Australia, when I came back from Australia, because I really liked Australian rules football.
Yeah.
But I didn't understand how it went. So I read, there's a series called Specky McGee.
Ooh.
And it's about a kid who wants to be an AFL pro, mm-hmm. but he has, and he's a really good jumper because he makes spectacular jumps. Mm-hmm. And that's why they call him Specky.
Okay.
Because Australia will shorten a word.
As will hockey players.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody.
What's the slang?
So everybody has a nickname. And in fact, this is like my one major grievance about Eden Rivalry is that they call the players by their full names. I'm like, nobody's doing that. Like, no one's calling Hollander Hollander. He is going to be Holly. He will be Halls. Maybe Shaner. I feel like he'd probably be a Shaner. They call Rosanoff Rosanoff. That's not going to happen. He's going to be a Roser, or he's going to be a
Rosie?
Holly. Rosie. I think Rosie's probably the one for. But once I realized that, I was like, oh no. We got to fix this. So Jacob Tierney, Jacob Tierney, in the, I know you're writing season two right now. In the highly unlikely event that you were listening to this podcast, I beg of you, use their nicknames. It's very important. You know
two
this.
Two hockey fans, you know this.
You wrote Come Riley on, and Jonesy. You know.
Rangers, this has been a delightful episode of The Dork Forest. I hope you were delighted. I was delighted. Amma Marfa, were you delighted?
So delighted. I've been waiting there for someone go. To let me yap about Heated Rivalry for an hour. What a pleasure.
It's at Marfo. AMMAMAR. So many M's. AMMAMARFO.com/comedy and at Amma Marfo on Instagram and YouTube. Mm-hmm. She's going to be in Traverse City, Michigan in April for their comedy festival next month. And Fidget Spinster. Look for it in the fall. Thank you so much for doing the show. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?